Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 134. I'm your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Aye, Captain.
Hello, Pete.
Hey, ahoy, matey.
Ahoy. We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We've got some new games to talk about, as well as some news. Plus, we have this week's big topic, which we are calling the Perfect Tens. We'll be discussing the video games that we think are so good, we actually would rate them a 10 out of 10 on a conventional video game rating scale.
Like Mega Man Soccer?
We'll see. We'll see about that. If you want to pick that one, I won't stop you, though. Probably.
No, I'm not picking that one.
Before we get to that, though, let's kick things off with some game impressions. Specifically, just a few days ago was the release of Nintendo Labo. And for anyone who has been, you know, sleeping under a rock somewhere and missed out on it, this is cardboard papercraft meets video games by way of Nintendo exclusively on Switch. Two sets were released, the Variety Kit and the Robot Kit. And I actually have not picked up either of these yet, but Pete, it's my understanding that you did get at least the Variety Kit. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. So, you know, I've really been wanting to try this thing out. I just haven't had a chance to do it personally. But Pete, I would love to know what your thoughts are so far.
Yeah, so I picked up the Variety Kit over the weekend, and I'm actually pretty impressed. I wasn't sure what to expect going into it. But I can pretty much assure you that it's kind of classic, goofy Nintendo.
And that's often the best Nintendo.
Yeah, and what I mean by that is, I think that if you've ever played Electroplankton, or you've ever played Mario Paint, or you've ever even played, I don't know, even Nintendo Land to some extent,
okay,
I think there is a lot of that going on in this game. And, you know, it's almost hard to call it a game because there really aren't too many real games in it. You know, let me preface first, I didn't get to everything. Some of these sets take a long time to build. I mean, there's like, I started with the piano, which was maybe a mistake because it's probably the hardest, at least the most time. I believe it was saying somewhere between 160 minutes to 210 minutes.
Now, is that just to put the thing together?
That is just to put the dang thing together.
Wow, so that's like 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah, so it is a definite time sink, even just putting it together. But, you know, the weird part is that it's fun. Like, even putting it together, I had fun doing it.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah, and I just did it by myself. And I can imagine, you know, doing it with a small child. You know, I wouldn't go too small, maybe like 10 years old and up.
Yeah, because there's like a lot of intricate parts and a lot of really complex folding, especially with the piano, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, if you folded it wrong, you'd probably end up breaking it and need to buy a replacement part or call Nintendo. There are, I did see on their website, there are ways to buy replacement parts. So that's a good thing. That being said, yeah, the instructions are great. You go into the store and you buy this thing and it's giant. It's probably the biggest box Nintendo's had since Earthbound, maybe.
And it's pretty heavy, too.
Yeah, it actually does weigh a lot. And originally I went to go pick it up from Best Buy and it couldn't fit in my backpack. So I decided to come back on my way home. I didn't want to like have to tote this thing around all day. Anyway, it reminds me kind of like a Lego set. Right? Like it's got,
right. I mean, that's what it reminded me of too, just from, you know, seeing the pictures and hearing the announcement and all that stuff.
Yeah, so it's almost like roughly the size of like a briefcase, maybe.
Uh-huh.
But much thinner. It does weigh a decent amount for just being cardboard in a game.
Well, hey, as someone who has a huge collection of magazines, I know how much these things can weigh, you know, pretty darn quickly. It doesn't take a whole lot for that stuff to start getting heavy, but yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, then, you know, when you get home, you open it, and you got your game right in the front. It is interesting. This game can't be purchased on the eShop currently.
And right, and that makes sense because, you know, you need to have the cardboard to go with it. So.
Right. I almost wish there was because I do prefer my games electronically or digitally, I guess. I don't want to sound like a 50-year-old man. But yeah, I wish there was an option for that, but it's okay. So you get the game and then you open it up and you get these three different options and you get make, play, and discover.
Yeah, that's sort of been their catchphrase to it. I think that's like what's written on the marketing materials and the back of the box.
Well, it's apt because you can't really get to play and discover until you make. So you.
This is true.
I think the RC car you could get done in maybe like 10 minutes, something like that. and then all the way to the piano, which is, you know, the Whopper. Most of them require at least an hour to build.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Which sounds like a lot, but I'm telling you, it goes pretty quickly. And also, just up front, I made the piano and I made the motorbike.
Okay. Now, the other ones are, there's a house and a fishing rod. And there's the other one, the RC car. Is that the bug-looking thing?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, yeah, I wouldn't really call it an RC car. It's more like some sort of weird insect, but fine with me, whatever they want to call it. That's cool.
Yeah, totally. So then once you select what you're going to make, you go back to the briefcase, you open it up, and you've got, you know, each toy requires a certain amount of cardboard sheets, mm-hmm. and these sheets are all color-coded. So you go through, there's like a blue sheets are the fishing rod, red sheets are the motorcycle, black sheets are the piano. Anyway, you can kind of tell they did a good job of making sure that it's like very obvious which sheets are which.
Yeah, you're not going to get confused.
Yeah, and then the instructions are super simple. You know, they kind of break it down into steps. So I think each toy I've built so far had multiple steps. And I think it's about 5 or 6, depending on the toy.
Okay.
I might be wrong. But anyways, then you go in and then it really gives you cool tutorial videos. If you can imagine this, it's like a video that you can play in 360-degree real time.
Huh.
So basically, you can watch it getting folded from any angle, and at any moment, you can stop and change the camera angle. So if you need to go like very in-depth to see what's going on, there's a couple times where I was like, you know, huh, I wonder if that piece is supposed to be over that or this. You can literally just turn it around and zoom in and look. So it's pretty nice. It almost makes me wish, like, if you bought something from IKEA, you could do the same thing, but...
Yeah, understandable. And yeah, so what you're saying is there are no, you know, physical instructions. All the instructions are these videos and things that are part of the software.
Yep, that's correct. And, it's done in a very Nintendo style. Like, the localization's very good. It's, like, kind of funny. There's a couple times where you laugh. I mean, it's like... Instructions can't be that funny, but they are pretty good.
Right.
Anyways, as you put this thing together, it even tells you like when to stop and, you know, hey, this next section's going to be kind of rough, so you might want to get a drink of water or something like that.
All right. Good to know.
It's pretty cool because it kind of, there's certain times where it tells you to check, make sure you're building it right, make sure the things are registering the way they're supposed to. With the piano, it has this cool technology where it uses the right Joy-Con that has the infrared sensor. And then,
yeah, I mean, that's kind of a signature of this whole Nintendo Labo thing, I understand, right?
It is, but not every game uses it, because like the motorbike doesn't, except for the part where you make levels, and you don't really have to use it for that. You can also make levels old-fashioned way. But yeah, the piano intentionally uses the infrared camera to even work at all.
Right.
And so, yeah, they kind of make you check the keys and make sure they're working and, you know, spin the knob and all that. And I also think it's cool because it really breaks down what's going on. And so, like, if you were building this with a child, you'd be able to, like, kind of talk through it. I mean, it's not totally hard for me to understand, obviously, but when you see it in action, it's kind of impressive. You're like, wow, this thing, it's just stickers and cardboard, and then there's the random odd rubber band, but... It's pretty impressive that this thing actually works and it's designed really well.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, anyways, and then finally getting into like the game part of it, when you actually...
Yeah, that's what I've been really, really wondering about, because it's like, I know all about the cardboard, I've known all about the construction, I don't really know what the play part is like and what the software is like, so I've been waiting for you to fill me in on this.
Sorry. Yeah, so the play, it depends, right? Like with the piano, there really isn't a game associated with it.
Okay.
You basically get two functions that I can see. One is like a toy piano, and one is a studio.
Huh.
And the toy piano is kind of what you'd imagine. It's like you literally just have this piano screen, and if you insert different knobs, you get different sounds. One is like you put in one knob, and it's like a cat sound. Huh. And then you put in another one, it's like an old man making noises.
What are you doing? Get off my lawn, Pete!
Well, more it's like, ho, 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 ho. You know, it's...
It really does sound like the music maker in Mario Paint, though, when you say stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's what's so cool, is that it feels, in so many ways, it feels like the spiritual successor to Mario Paint.
Uh-huh.
And then, as you play, there's a couple different things that'll unlock. Like, I think you first have to play the toy piano, and then the next time you start it up, you get the option of doing the studio.
So what's the studio?
So the studio is more like you can actually record tracks. So you could actually go in and make a 8-track. If people don't know what I'm talking about, it's basically you can create, like, 8 layers of music.
Oh, okay.
So you can go through and play, like, you know, the bass line in a song, and then add in... you know, maybe like a couple elements. And then as you go on, you can actually record, like, I mean, I've seen some YouTube videos of people playing some pretty elaborate stuff. Huh. I almost think there's like no limit to the amount of crap you could make with this, but it's pretty cool.
Okay.
Then with the motorbike, same thing. It's like, you know, this one's more of a game. You construct this handlebars, and you actually have like an acceleration. You can use the throttle, so you rotate your hand to make that work.
Okay.
Once you build that, you kind of jump into this thing. It kind of feels like Mario Kart, for lack of a better way of saying it. It's like, I'd almost imagine like if you combined a mini game from like Wii Sports Resort and Mario Kart, and you are racing against like six other players that are, of course, computer driven. And yeah, you have to use your actual contraption you just built to try and race these other players. And there are a few different difficulty levels. I didn't play it too much, so I don't know how deep it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun, and I liked the idea of, you know, kind of actually having this thing that you have to lean with and steer with, as well as being able to have other people play it and watch them act like goofballs while they're playing it. So it kind of has that, like, Wii Sports element to it as well.
Yeah, yeah. Very motion-driven, huh?
Yes. And also, like, I will say that the Joy-Cons, there's one in either handlebar,
mm-hmm.
and they rumble really good. So when you're playing this thing, it actually, I mean, I'm not going to say it feels like you're on a motorcycle, but it definitely gives more force feedback than you'd expect from a cardboard contraption.
Okay, that's cool to know, too.
I think you asked me about the build quality, and it is pretty sturdy, but you do have to be a little careful. I mean, if you had somebody who's just like gets a little into their video games,
mm-hmm.
like you, Chris, I've seen you get a little little pretty intense with your games. I could see somebody just like accidentally bending this thing really easily.
I do have a habit of keeping a death grip on my control when I'm playing Mario Kart. It is true.
See, I could actually see that happening. Yeah, you don't really want to squeeze too hard. It'll endure okay. a lot, but like you might not just want to like give it to an 8-year-old and have him go wild.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering. It's like, you know, is it all flimsy? Is this something you really, you know, can trust kids with? Especially if you've got, you know, the electronic components in there.
Yeah, it's built well. You know, it's funny, the motorcycle, it actually makes you lock the screen in. So the actual Switch unit itself, there's like a little cardboard flap you have to like encase it in. Whereas, like, the piano, you literally just set it in the piano. So it's kind of funny. They, I guess they, you know, you can get pretty wild with the handlebars, so they probably don't want your system just flying out onto the floor.
Right, right.
Which is probably for the best. But again, it's designed well, and it all makes sense. And then this last thing, Discover, is basically a way of going into each game and kind of getting breakdowns of specific parts of it. So with the piano, there's, like, a lesson about how the knobs work. And a lesson about how the tonation works, and a lesson about how the keys even work.
Sounds very educational.
Well, it sounds a little boring, I guess, because you don't really just want to go through a manual. At least I don't. So what they did was Nintendo kind of created these like three different characters, and I fail to remember all of them, but one is called Dr. Jerry Rig, and one is called Plays All Day. And I cannot remember the third girl. But anyways, you basically are in this like text chat with these people. And so you pick a subject, and then it turns into this, for lack of a better way of saying it, like a smartphone text chat between these three people.
Mm-hmm.
And then occasionally they'll like post a video or a screenshot, and it kind of helps explain what they're trying to talk about. But I actually think it's a really fun way to explain stuff without like just giving you this like manual that you have to read yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little interactive. There's moments where you get to choose an answer, and you can kind of play it smart or like be totally goofy. Anyway, it's just kind of a fun, you'd have to see it to understand. Maybe you can find a YouTube video of it, but it's cool. It's very Nintendo, and it's very cheeky.
All right. Good to know. Now, those are the only two toy cons you have played with, right? You haven't tried the house or the fishing rod or the other one yet, right?
Yeah, you know, I didn't even do the RC car one, even though it takes 10 minutes. I just didn't have the time. And I also kind of wanted to, like, leave some stuff unplayed. It's almost like I recommend you kind of go through, build one thing, and then play that for a little while. Because I can definitely see like spending some serious time with the piano or spending some serious time with the motorcycle. So the motorcycle, there was also a part where you can go and make your own levels.
Oh, nice.
One way of doing it is you literally are flying on a motorcycle around a level.
Huh.
And it tells you how much track you have left. And you can go almost anywhere. I don't think you can do loop-de-loops or anything like that, but you can do like almost like a parking garage, you know, spiral down.
Oh, okay.
And you also can use the IR camera to make a track that looks like the palm of your hand.
Huh.
I made one that looked like my beard, but it was way too bumpy to really be fun. So
that's astounding. So you're liking it so far, huh?
I am. The biggest thing is that it is very Nintendo quirky.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know what that is and you like that, then you're going to like this. I almost guarantee it. I do think, you know, one thing is like, I could see myself playing the piano a lot more than like the motorcycle, for example. The piano's pretty cool because I think you could just put it on a shelf and it's kind of a conversation piece. And when you have company over, they'll probably be like, what in the heck is that? And then you show them and then it's kind of this like, you know, fun interactive piano you get to play on.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think mileage may vary depending on who you are and what you like to do. I think the fishing rod one looks really fun. It's also sort of like one of those things you probably break out when you got a niece or a nephew over. It's not a game you're going to sit down and play for 40 hours and be blown away with like mm-hmm. Breath of the Wild. But, you know, I think people know that going into this. But this is more of like these mini games that have a lot of depth to them. I think some of them also have even like, you know, spin-off mini games. Like I saw that there's a few more things to do with the motorcycle that I haven't tried out yet.
Okay.
That kind of unlock as you play. But so far, really enjoying it. I just think it's, you know, Nintendo at its best. I'm excited to see if this sells well, if they'll end up making more.
Right, right.
You know, they've probably had some games they had to cut out of this version or the robot version.
Yeah, I'm sure they got more ideas.
Yeah, so who knows? I really hope it does well for them.
So after playing this, do you get the feeling that you want to pick up the robot one as well?
You know, I definitely would consider it. I think my big setback is just that it is more expensive and it feels more limited.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me, you know, projecting. I don't know anything about that. But from what I've read and what I see at this moment, I probably wouldn't. But I you know, it is intriguing.
Yeah, definitely.
Like if I went over to somebody's house and they had it, I would 100% try it. At the same time, I don't think for me personally, it's the way I'm going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, intriguing is definitely the word I associate with this. I mean, I was very interested to begin with. After hearing you talk about it, I'm even more interested. You know, I still feel like I have to go hands-on myself before I actually, you know, spend the money to own it.
Yeah.
But it's certainly very, very interesting. But, you know, just, you know, knowing my taste, do you think it's something that I would want to be sure to buy, Pete?
I think you would. And I think, you know, from one angle, you're a big Amiibo collector, and I know these aren't, as this has nothing to do with Amiibo, but there is something novel about having these sort of props that you build.
It's true.
And there is something fun about just looking at the piano, for example, on your shelf. There's something where you're like, oh, yeah, I should give that a shot. Or again, it kind of goes back to that like conversation piece. It's kind of mm-hmm. something that's kind of fun to have. It also kind of reminds you, at least so far when I look at it, it kind of reminds me of when I built it, like just how it was put together, and I know all the ins and outs of it. And I don't know, there's just something kind of inherently fun about it.
All right, cool. Well, I have one more question for you.
Sure.
And that is, do you know anything about, you know, this mode that's advertised on the back of the package where it talks about like making your own kits out of common household goods?
Yeah, so there is this whole, I can't remember the name of it. I think it's called like the Secret Underground or something.
Okay.
But there's this mode you can access where essentially, from what I understand, you can program
mm-hmm.
your own mini games using the Joy-Cons and the system and all that. I have not touched it.
Okay.
But I have watched a few videos online of people doing some pretty cool stuff with it. I don't know if you've seen anything.
No, I haven't. Not at all.
So I saw this one where somebody took a hat and put it upside down and then put a Joy-Con with the IR sensor pointing into the hat. And essentially, you've got the game screen off to the side, and they made a little like piece of paper that goes over the top of it that says hat trick game. And there's a little box where when you throw a card into the hat, it counts the number of cards that actually make it into the hat.
Hmm, okay.
It's like, again, leave it to Nintendo to make this like function that just, you almost can't even explain. Like, you sound like, when you hear me say that, it sounds bananas and like, why would you care? But when you see it executed, there's just something really fun about it. It's like, I think it's partially because it's limited to your own imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And there are literally like countless things you can do.
Well, I will admit, I certainly don't quite understand it even yet, but it certainly sounds like it has a lot of promise.
Yeah, I mean, some of the videos I've seen, people have made these really complex, like, you know, if you hit this button, do this. And if you see this, then do that. And
mm-hmm.
there's just a lot of like intro to coding type stuff that is pretty impressive. And I don't know how far down that rabbit hole I will go. It starts to get into the Minecraft world where like it's basically what you make of it.
Mm-hmm.
If people are into that, I 100% think that this will scratch that itch. Just for me personally, it's not really something I'm super looking into. But if I did get an idea for something, I might see if it's possible.
Maybe like, you know, some sort of, you know, electronic switch-controlled beard grooming device, maybe?
You never know. You never know.
Okay. Well, perhaps we'll look forward to that.
Please look forward to it.
I guess I do have one last question. Do you need to have a lot of hard, flat surfaces in your home to be able to use this properly?
Not that I can tell. So far, I mean, you definitely want to do this on a desk, like as you're doing the folding. I wouldn't recommend just like doing it on the floor. I mean, you could, but after spending 4 hours on the floor, sitting cross-legged or something, you're probably not going to enjoy. You might throw out your back or something. Maybe I'm projecting again.
Yeah, speak for yourself.
But no, a desk, I would highly recommend a desk for making these contraptions. You do not need a desk to play them.
Okay.
Maybe the RC car one. It looks like you would, you know, at least do it on like the kitchen floor or something. Probably can't do it on carpet.
Yeah, that's kind of the one I was worried about.
But yeah, I don't think you'd run into a lot of problems with that.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, certainly sounds interesting. I'm glad that you're having a good time with it. And yeah, I will check this thing out as soon as possible if I get the chance.
Yeah, and unlike most of Nintendo's games, I really hesitate to give this one any type of score,
mm-hmm.
just because it's so complex. I mean, each toy is completely different. If you think, you know, one sounds interesting, then you probably will find it interesting. And all I can recommend is that if you're on the fence, give it a shot. It's really about the price of a game. I know it's a little bit more, but it's not much.
That's true.
And the package in general is just all Nintendo, and it... it's fun, and there's a lot of substance there, so you're not going to be like at a loss of things to do with it.
All right, cool. Once again, thanks for sharing your insights.
Yeah, I hope it was worthwhile. I know I talked a lot about it.
All right, let us move along then from Nintendo Labo to some gaming news. First of all, we've got a little bit of bad news from the folks at Bandai Namco, and that is that Dark Souls Remastered for Switch has been delayed until summer.
No!
It is no longer going to make the May release date.
Man.
And of course, that means that the associated Dark Souls Amiibo has been delayed as well.
How do you feel about that, Chris?
Well, I'm not sure if I was going to pick up the game or not. I'm definitely, you know, waiting to hear what other people think or to, you know, try it out a little bit for myself. You know, of course, I'm always eager to add a new Amiibo to my collection. So for me, that's definitely the bigger bummer. What about you? Were you planning to get this one next month?
Yeah, Chris, I was planning on picking this up. So it is kind of a bummer to see it get delayed, but I'm not lacking of things to play right now. And
yeah, totally.
If they're going to make sure that it's polished and not going out the door all broken, then so be it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I am sorry you're not able to add it to your Amiibo collection just yet.
Yeah, hopefully it won't be too much longer. You know, we don't really know how long the delay is. You know, summer could mean June, it could mean July, it could be in August, it could mean September. So we shall see.
It's true.
On the other hand, we got some positive release date updates for a couple of other titles. For one thing, we found out that Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, is going to be hitting Switch on June 29th. And then we found out that Sonic Mania Plus is coming out on July 17th. In addition, we learned that if you already own Sonic Mania, you can get the upgrade to the Plus mode, which includes four-player multiplayer and two new characters, and I'm not really sure what else, for only $5. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you planning to add either of those to your collection?
Yeah, I probably will pick up both of those. I've really wanted to pick up Doom for my Switch, but I've already played it, and I just couldn't justify picking it up again.
Makes sense.
The portability really wasn't a big draw for me, whereas Wolfenstein 2, I've not played it. It looks really good, and to me, the portability is a huge selling point, so
okay.
I'm all in. And then Sonic, yeah, of course, the $5 is kind of a no-brainer, especially considering the amount of content they're adding.
Yeah, for me, you know, I always wanted to have Sonic Mania in physical form, so I'll be paying the whole $30 to get it physical on a Switch game card. But, you know, either way, you know, it seems like a great thing to get considering how excellent the original Sonic Mania was.
You're always trying to get physical.
Well, that I am. And speaking of more physically released games, the folks at Limited Run Games have revealed that Night Trap is on the way to Nintendo Switch. And they will be publishing it in physical form, yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, for those who are unaware, Night Trap is the infamously bad FMV game where you watch surveillance camera footage and then set and activate traps to catch evil vampires, I think, and try to save teenage girls at a slumber party, I believe.
Stop pretending like you don't know.
I've honestly never played that game. I've not played the Sega CD original. I have not played it when it was re-released last year. But yeah, to the best of my knowledge, that is what that game is about. Have you ever played it before? Or are you looking forward to this version?
You know, I have played it. I mean, I originally played it as a young lad on the Sega CD at a cousin's house. I remember it being really hard. Mm. It's essentially, from what I understand, I've not played Five Nights at Freddy's. I don't know if you have.
I haven't.
Essentially, it's the same style of game. You're basically like a security guard, and you're hopping around to different security cameras,
right,
trying to prevent these, you know, vampire ninjas from, like, I don't know. But there actually is, like, from what I understand, it's like, should be R-rated if it was a movie.
Well, I didn't think there was actually any blood or explicit violence or anything.
I don't know. I've heard mixed, but maybe we should not talk about this because I don't know.
Well, I remember there was, you know, tons of concern about it in the 90s, and, you know, most of the people who I talked to who actually played it said that most of that concern was unwarranted. But again, I don't have first-hand experience with it myself. You know, the other thing I remember hearing about the game is that it's supposed to not be very good at all. That's the primary reason I have stayed away from it. But hey, if you are into cult classics, so to speak, you know, more power to you. I'm glad you'll have a chance to pick it up on Switch.
So tell me, this would be, I would have to buy it physical and not digital. That's what Limited Run Games does, right?
Well, yes, that is their specialty, but there will be a digital release as well when it hits this summer.
Yeah, because I imagine this game will actually sell well, but who knows? I it's one of those, I don't know if I'd spend more than $20 for this game because I don't think I'd actually really sit down and play it. It's not a masterpiece.
That's what I've heard.
And I would almost just buy it for nostalgia's sake. And the fact that it's having a physical release is actually really cool.
Now, I assume since you're not really into, you know, physical releases on Switch, that you are not intending to get Mercenary Kings or Flint Hook, which went up for sale recently and will be available for pre-order until May 7th?
No, I would prefer to buy those digitally, to be honest.
Okay. That's what I thought you were going to say. I'm still kind of on the fence. I did end up pre-ordering their first release, that being Thimbleweed Park. And so I'm going to have that arriving, you know, sometime over the summer.
Nice.
But as for Mercenary Kings and Flint Hook, I'm still undecided. If I have the money to spare, I'll probably get them. But if I don't, then I suppose I'll have to sit this round out.
Now, Flint Hook looks really good. Mercenary Kings I have played.
Yeah, I played that one on PS4.
Yeah, but Flint Hook just came out recently, and that actually looks really fun.
Yeah, it does. Of course, both Flint Hook and Mercenary Kings are in the eShop now, so you can definitely grab them that way if you don't want to go the Limited Run Games route.
Excellent.
Moving along then to one other bit of news. Sorry, this is something that is only available in physical form. It's not a game. This is about some upcoming Nintendo-themed Christmas ornaments that will be available for this holiday season.
Oh?
Yes, there are three of them that Hallmark will be releasing this year. The first one is a Donkey Kong arcade machine, a miniature, like, you know, 4-inch tall DK arcade machine. And it's, like, amazingly detailed from what they've shown in the pictures. And it's got, like, lights and then sound effects from the game. It costs $20, and yeah, just looking at the detail on this thing, like, you know, seeing all the artwork and the labels and, you know, the controls, it just looks really, really impressive. And this will be available to purchase on July 14th.
Yeah, holy smokes, it looks really cool.
Yeah, it does. Also on July 14th, there will be a Mario Kart ornament, which is, you know, Mario in his cart. He's holding up a checkered flag. And this one doesn't have any electronics or anything, but it'll be available for $18. And then, on top of that, there is a Link Christmas ornament featuring him in his pose from the classic, I think it's the Famicom Legend of Zelda box art, mm-hmm. you know, with this Legend of Zelda base he stands on. And yeah, so it's, you know, very, very classic look for Link. This one apparently will play the song from the game when you hit a button.
Nothing says Christmas like Zelda theme.
Hey, that's definitely true for me. I remember when I got Zelda 2 under my Christmas tree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one will be $18 and will be available on October 6th.
Awesome. Will you buy these for me for Christmas?
You'll have to put them on your Christmas list and see if Santa delivers them to you. As for me personally, I'm almost definitely going to get the Donkey Kong arcade machine. It's, you know, a bit iffy on Link. I'm not 100% sold on the sculpt I've seen for him so far. I'm probably not going to get Mario Kart, though.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But I'm pretty sold on that Link pose. It's really cool.
I like the pose, just not the face. The face looks a little off to me, but maybe I'll have to see it in person.
Your face looks a little off.
How dare you?
I actually like the Zelda rock that he's standing on, too. It's not bad.
Yeah, that's cool.
And the fact that it plays the music?
Yeah, I have to agree. Yeah, maybe once I see it in person, I won't be able to resist. But yeah, right now I'm a little on the fence. I do wish, though, that there had been more just, you know, Mario ornaments to follow up last year's. Because in 2017, they did Mario and Luigi and Yoshi, and they were all, you know, this very similar theme of the characters, you know, like jumping up at blocks. And I was thinking maybe there would be a Peach or a Bowser or maybe even Wario or Toad to go along in, you know, sort of the same series. And it looks like they're not doing that this year, so I'm a little disappointed in that. But still, you know, Hallmark will definitely get my money for at least one, probably two of these things.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to that. Okay, that takes care of the news for this week. So let's take an intermission, and then when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, the perfect tens. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the perfect tens. And by that, I mean we are talking about games that, you know, if we had given a chance, you know, whether it was something recent or something way back in the day, that we'd have given a perfect 10 out of 10 to on, you know, a Nintendo Power rating scale, or, you know, just perhaps any generic rating scale. 10 does seem to be the most common. Of course, when we're saying we would give the game a perfect 10, that doesn't mean the game has to be perfect. But, you know, what would you say makes a game, you know, get a 10 out of 10? Because it's very, very rare. It's something we almost never did at Nintendo Power. It's something that I have very, very rarely done in my career and something that I never gave out at NP.
Yeah, I think with 10s, I think you have to be careful, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you give too many games a 10, then you sort of take away from what it means to be a perfect 10.
Right.
So, you know, if you go around just saying, like, all your favorite games are 10s, well, that doesn't really do anything justice, because it's like...
Right, right.
You know, but I do think that it is, like, there are exceptional games, right? There are games that seem to tick every box in regards mm-hmm. to, you know, gameplay, the graphics, the sound. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily have to be all top-notch or anything like that, but it's like, as long as it sort of fits in that universe and that game, you know, envelops the style.
Well, for me, you know, when I think of what makes a 10, it seems like it's a game that it just has to be super, super fun. You know, that's probably the most important thing.
Wow.
You know, I don't think that, you know, the graphics and sound have to, like, be, you know, absolutely the best, but I think it does have to look good and sound good, and it probably has to be superior to the other games of its type. I also think it definitely helps if it has, you know, some level of innovation. Not that it has to entirely break new ground, but I think it's more likely that you would give a game a 10 if it's something that, you know, you haven't already played a lot of before.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think it definitely helps. I'm not saying it has to, but I think it definitely helps.
Yeah.
Then on top of that, you know, the game just shouldn't obviously have any significant problems. If it has, you know, technical problems or control issues or a bad frame rate or something, you know, then I just wouldn't be able to give it a 10. Even if I loved, you know, every other aspect of the game, I just wouldn't feel right giving it a 10. And of course, this is all very subjective. You know, what one person thinks makes a game super, super fun, and, you know, what constitutes a significant flaw, you know, might not be the same thing that another person thinks of. So again, you know, it's all very subjective, very person to person. So this, of course, is just our takes on, you know, games that we think are worthy of getting a 10.
Now, to clarify also, Chris, what do you think about the time in which the game was released? Does that come into play at all?
Well, I think, you know, for me, from where my head is thinking about this, I think I'm definitely taking that into account. You know, if I'm going to be talking about NES games that should have been given a 10, you know, I think I would have to have the mindset of talking about this in respect to the 8-bit era. You know, if I were to play one of those games today for the first time and think of it as a brand new game,
yep,
would it get a 10? I don't know. But in the context of, you know, 1988, yes, probably. So that's where I'm coming from for this discussion, at least.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that you do have to consider what was the competition, what was the industry like at the time when this game came out. Otherwise, it just kind of feels out of context and weird.
Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I've only ever given out one perfect score in my career. It was not a 10 out of 10 because at that time, the magazine I was with was not using a 10 out of 10 rating scale. I think we were using 4 stars or something like that as the maximum. And I did give out a 4-star review that was to Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater.
Mmm. Tasty.
Indeed. When that game came to 3DS, though, I did not give it a 10 out of 10 Nintendo Power. The frame rate was, you know, kind of iffy in that version, so it did not garner quite the same high praise as the original. Still a great game, but not a 10.
Sure.
Anyway, with all of that out of the way, we should jump into it. We'll be going more or less chronologically, you know, through the different eras of gaming, picking out the titles that we would give a 10 to. So, Pete, do you want to jump in and name a game from the NES era that you think is deserving of this honor?
You know, if I could time warp back to the 80s and pick up an NES for the first time,
mm-hmm.
one game that I feel like truly didn't get enough attention, and I know you've talked about this game ad nauseum, and I have too, but I just don't think that it truly got the praise that it deserves because it really set the standard of this style of game.
Okay, you got me on the edge of my seat here. What is it?
Until the N64 era, really. Pro wrestling.
Pro wrestling, huh.
And I know that's an odd choice, but that game is one of the best wrestling games and was the best for maybe a decade.
Wow.
At least as far as home consoles are concerned.
Interesting choice.
I mean, can you name me a better wrestling game that came out within 5 to 10 years of that game?
Well, I was a big fan of the WWF wrestling games that came out during the Super Nintendo era, personally. But, you know, to each their own. And obviously, I have a lot of respect for Starman and the Amazon, so I'm not going to body slam your choice here.
I just think that, you know, when you look at it, what it, that game was at the time, and the fact that Nintendo, of all companies, made it, mm-hmm. it kind of just boggles the mind. It's like, how did this game get created? How was it so good? How is the music still in my head to this day?
How could you give us a winner as you?
Like, there were games that came after it, but you couldn't, in those games, you couldn't climb the turnbuckle and jump on a guy from inside the ring to outside the ring.
Yeah, it took a while for other games to let you do that, yeah.
And it's just, you know, to me, it's just mind-blowing that somehow Nintendo was like, you know what, I think our fans deserve a pro wrestling game. And not only did they make this cool game, but they also made these cool characters that went along with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think if you just kind of step back and you look at all the aspects of that game, from the character art to the special moves to the gameplay to the music and just the fun factor, like you said, that game I probably put so many hours in on the NES I don't even care to admit it. So yeah, for my money, pro wrestling, I think that is actually a perfect 10.
Huh, okay, all right, that was not on my list, but one that would be on mine from the NES days is Mega Man 2.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, I suppose there's not much of a surprise there. I believe I have claimed it is my favorite NES game in the past. But for me, you know, it's just a game that's a total package. You know, fantastic graphics, fantastic music, fantastic control. You know, it took a really, really great concept of the original, and it just improved upon it with, you know, a better selection of characters, you know, wider array of levels. And I thought that they, you know, honed in the difficulty perfectly, you know, challenging, but, you know, not, you know, ridiculously challenging like, you know, perhaps some of the other Mega Man games, and perhaps, you know, some other games of that era were. But yeah, Mega Man 2 would definitely be one for me.
Can I just ask you why Mega Man 2 over the future Mega Mans after that, like 3 and 4 and 5 and 6?
Well, you know, definitely an argument could be made for those other ones, but, you know, I think this struck the sweet spot of improving upon the formula, but, you know, not getting too tired. You know, it still had enough, that innovative spark. You know, whereas the other games, you know, you could say, well, they're just kind of going through the same motions as what's come previously. Mega Man 2 was like, you know, taking this idea and just honing it to, you know, perfection,
yep.
You know, appropriately enough.
And what a soundtrack.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that Dr. Wily music in my head forever. Speaking of NES games with great music, I would also have given a perfect 10 to Ninja Gaiden.
Uh-huh.
You know, that game has fantastic music, amazing action. You know, it was super innovative because of, you know, the whole, you know, cutscene mm-hmm. element. Those cinema scenes were so groundbreaking at the time. You know, the wall spring jump was really cool.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's another one I would give a 10 to. And another NES title, the original Contra. You know, that was just done so well.
Yep.
You know, it's got the two-player co-op. It has, you know, really interesting levels, has really fun power-ups. And then they broke up the traditional side-scrolling action with those, you know, third-person, you know, faux 3D stages that really balanced things out and made things really, really fun. And, you know, a lot of times I will say that, you know, for my money, there is almost no better way to spend, like, 30 minutes than just playing through a game of Contra.
It also really was the closest the NES got to an arcade perfect port.
Yeah, that's very arguable too.
Yeah.
In some ways, though, I might even say it's better than the arcade game.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, just from being at that point in time, there weren't a lot of games that you could play at home that felt so close to the arcade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I actually like the way that the NES version feels when it comes to, you know, character movement and controls over the arcade game. So, yep, definitely agree there.
Cool.
Were there any other NES titles that stood out for you?
I mean, I want to go like Super Mario Brothers 3 or something, but you like 2 better, huh?
I do. I do like Mario 2 better than Mario 3, and it's a very, you know, almost a silly reason why, because I would give Super Mario Brothers 2 a perfect 10. I would not give it to Mario 3, and that is mostly because I feel like the game is too long to not have a save feature. That's like the one thing that irritates me about the game. And if it did have that, then I'd be like, yes, I couldn't ask for anything more when it comes to a Mario game. But since it doesn't have that, that's why I would probably not give it to him. Part 2, I mean, I know it's not a true Mario game, but I just love those gameplay mechanics. It's so much fun. You know, the graphics were great for 8-bit. You know, having the 4 different characters, the different powers, all that stuff worked out really well. I love the bosses. You know, Wart, I think, is a great villain. So, yeah. Yeah, all that stuff adds up to me. I would give Mario 2 a 10.
Yeah, and Birdo, of course.
Yes, yes, he's definitely one of those great villains.
No, Mario 2 does have a special place in my heart. You know, the Shy Guys and just the fact that it was so different. It was like the first Mario game where, well, I guess it was the second Mario game, but it just really felt like a departure. And yes, you're right, because it was a different game. But it's cool to see that Nintendo used those characters throughout the rest of its franchises.
Yeah, yeah. And then to cap off the NES, you know, I would be tempted to give a perfect 10 to Tetris.
You know, I like what you're thinking. That actually was in my head, too.
I mean, obviously, it's a brilliant, groundbreaking puzzle game. And yes, there was, you know, the other versions of Tetris out there. Some of them, you know, even had more features than the NES one. But this was the one that really introduced me to what Tetris was all about. So, you know, playing this for the first time, you're just experiencing the magic of, you know, this addictive falling block puzzle genre. You know, that was really, really hard to beat. Plus, you know, it was nice and colorful, had some, you know, pretty great music, had cool cameos by Mario and Samus and Pit and other characters at that end. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to really, you know, call out any problems with Tetris. So, yeah, I think that would be on there. And definitely, when I was a kid, I totally would have said Zelda 2. Because Zelda 2 was my favorite game as a kid for a long time.
No,
you know, by today, I'm not sure if I would say that anymore. But at the time, I totally would have said that.
You know, you just took a step down in my level of, I don't know what to say. Zelda 2, really?
What's wrong with Zelda 2? It looks great. It looks way, way better than the original. It puts the original absolutely to shame when it comes to graphics.
That's fair.
It has fantastic music. I mean, I know it lacks a lot of stuff compared to the original Zelda. I mean, it almost completely does not have the puzzle element in there. And I know a lot of people be like, no, the difficulty is just way, way off the charts. It's so unfair. It could never, you know, be rated that high. And you know, I do recognize that, but, you know, not really having that much of a thing to compare it to, I really, really love that game. Like I said, I don't think I would give it a 10 out of 10, but I would definitely think about it very hard.
You know, I do have to give it some points, and the main reason why is because it's such a departure from the original.
Oh, that's true, too.
It's really insane to think about Nintendo going, oh, hey, let's take one of our best-selling games, and for the sequel, we'll completely reinvent it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, people give Breath of the Wild, you know, a lot of props for being so innovative, but it's not like they just threw out everything that came before and like, hey, let's build something completely new from the ground up like they did with Zelda 2. That was very nuts. But that is a topic for another time.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and if it was any other company, it feels like they would have just took the same elements of Zelda 1 and just like made new levels.
Right, exactly.
But not Nintendo and not Miyamoto.
Nope. All right, well, let's move along. Is there anything you would give a perfect 10 to on the Game Boy?
Well, you mentioned Tetris on NES. Mm-hmm. I have to give Tetris it on Game Boy. It really,
totally understandable.
It really was the perfect game to own for the Game Boy.
Yeah, totally.
I think I've probably logged more hours on that than anything else, at least on the Game Boy. And yeah, it's one of the best.
Yeah, totally. I absolutely understand that one. I mean, I lean towards the NES one because I like them color graphics.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there is nothing better suited for Game Boy, really, than Tetris. My perfect 10 pick for the Game Boy, though, would be Link's Awakening.
Hmm. Good choice.
I mean, obviously, it's The Legend of Zelda, and it has, you know, all of those, you know, fantastic puzzle elements and tools and all that stuff that made Zelda great to begin with. It looks pretty darn amazing for a, you know, four-color black-and-white game. I love the localization for that one as well. I just think that came together remarkably well for considering the restrictions of that system. I guess the one thing that has me a little bit on the fence is that you had to swap between your two items with those two buttons very, very frequently. It just felt like it would have been better if you'd had four buttons instead of just two, so you wouldn't be constantly swapping in those items there.
Yep.
But I think I can overlook that and still say, it's worthy of a 10.
Yeah, absolutely. It is one of the best Zelda games. And it's fun because it is so different. It's just like it breaks from the format. You can also tell they built it on a handheld in mind because there's like the hint tips you get from the phone. Do you know what I'm talking about, where the old man calls you and tells you?
Well, I do remember. I still know what it has to do with being perfect for handheld.
Oh, just because, you know, handheld, it's like you might have to stop and save and pick up it again later. You're not just going to probably play it in one. Nintendo kind of does that with a lot with their portable games. They just, like, try to add more save spots and all that.
Well, and I do remember that it let you basically save, you know, anywhere. You'd always restart any door you went through. So if you have to quit like that or your batteries ran out on you,
yeah,
you would be able to pick up again at you know, a very convenient spot. So yeah, very, very true.
Yeah, when I recently played it again, I was thinking, like, wow, that was really helpful that it tells you what to do. Well, like, when you don't know what you're supposed to do, you can go call somebody and it'll tell you what you should do next.
I'm not sure I've ever even used that feature.
Well, you're not as lazy of a gamer as me. So Tetris wasn't my only Game Boy pick. I would also have to include Pokemon in that list.
Oh, okay.
And Game Boy was really the perfect platform for Pokemon in hindsight.
I guess you could say that.
You know, the install base was huge. It's kind of unbelievable that it's the same system that it came out for as Tetris.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally came out, like, what, 10 years later?
It was almost 10 years, but not quite, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, just the fact that you could actually transfer Pokemon between the two because it had a link cable. If it came out on any other platform, you wouldn't have that ability and that whole...
Well, the whole, you know, idea of, you know, being able to take it around to your friends and fight with them and trade with them, it was perfect for a portable system. So really, nothing else would have made sense.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it almost even helped pave the way, I think, for Nintendo's future handhelds, in a way.
Oh, I'm sure they definitely kept it in mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't give that a perfect 10 myself, but I certainly respect your choice.
Except for the copy in that game. It's garbage.
All right, then. Moving along to the Super NES. Man, I feel like I have a whole lot of games on the Super NES I would give a 10 to. So I'm just going to try to go through this very quickly. I mean, obviously, I think it starts with Super Mario World.
Mm-hmm.
It had, you know, all the best of the previous Mario games. You know, it had the great ideas from Super Mario 1 and Super Mario 3. Only, you know, it did it with increased graphical fidelity and better music and a save system this time.
Yep.
And a nonlinear world. And
they added a character you ride.
Yes, yes, this is true. It just all came together really, really perfectly. So, you know, that one is an easy 10 for me. I mean, it's like right out of the gate with the Super Nintendo. Your first game, the game that came through the system, you're going to give that a 10? Yes, I'm going to give that one a 10.
Yep.
It is still that good, and it still holds up today.
Totally agree.
You know, Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. I have talked ad nauseum about how much I love that game, so I'm not going to go into the reasons why, but I would totally give that a 10.
And that still holds up to this day.
Yes. The original Street Fighter 2.
Yep.
I would give a 10 as well. You know, it was not a perfect arcade port, but it came really, really close and just brought that arcade experience home really, really well. You know, fantastic graphics, great characters, wonderful music, controlled shockingly well on the Super NES pad, and just was so, so, so fun for, you know, two players at home. Another one is Mega Man X. Building upon the formula from the NES Mega Man games, you know, making it look better and sound better and, you know, aging it up a little bit, you know, cool new bosses, wall climbing powers. So, yeah, those are just a few of them on the Super NES. What are some Super NES picks of yours?
The only game that I would add to your list is Super Metroid.
Ah, well, that is definitely on my list, too, and very understandable. Yeah, again, just like, you know, with some of the other titles we've mentioned, you know, built upon what was done with the NES game and just like, pow, knocked into the stratosphere with, you know, better graphics and in-game map and really you hit a home run with that atmosphere.
Yeah, really improved upon everything of the Metroid franchise had established.
Yeah.
Added a save feature and then also, you know, just everything got ratcheted up a notch by just, you know, using the new technology to be even, you know, more immersive and more, like for that time period, pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Another one from the Super NES I'd give a 10, ActRaiser.
Mm-hmm.
An amazing combination of side-scrolling action and world-building, and of course, you know, let me not forget to mention the fantastic, mind-blowing Yuzo Koshiro soundtrack. I mean, it sounded like there was a whole, you know, freaking orchestra coming out of the Super NES.
Yeah, that was really unreal.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 4, Turtles in Time. I don't think that two-player co-op action games can really get any better than that. Again, you know, it was the perfect combination of controls and graphics and, you know, just, you know, innovative level design. You're hopping around to these different time periods, and just the amount of detail that Konami put into that game is kind of mind blowing. Just, you know, all these little cool animations, just all this great stuff in that game. And speaking of Konami stuff, Super Castlevania IV would be on that list. You know, I think that, you know, the difficulty was a little bit more honed and polished than the previous Castlevania outings. Being able to do all that cool stuff with the whip, you know, whip in eight directions, grapple with the whip, and then, you know, all the nifty Mode 7 effects, you know, the rotating rooms and all that, you know, made it, you know, super, super good.
Yeah.
Axelay as well, you know, I've gone on record and called that my all-time favorite shooter, and I stand by that. And then when it comes to role-playing games, you know, there are two on the Super NES that I would definitely give 10s to, those being Final Fantasy III, aka Final Fantasy VI, and Chrono Trigger.
Mm. Yeah, good call.
And I mean, you know, maybe a lot of this is just nostalgia, or maybe it's just the fact that a lot of these things, you know, they had never been done as well as they had at that time. You know, they had ideas that started in the 8-bit era, and then by the time 16-bit rolled around, like, okay, we have figured out how to improve upon these. We are making them, you know, look and sound and play better than they were when they were first created. And now, you know, it's like sort of in its ultimate form here. And, you know, just that a lot of them, you know, they might not have ever been done better as they were back then.
Yeah, it really was interesting because it was such a jump from, you know, 8-bit to 16-bit. And, you know, as you mentioned, it's like all these ideas that got kind of got formed and executed on the original ended up coming out and just blowing the original away in every sense.
Yeah.
And not even, you know, and it would have been one thing if it was literally just better graphics and better sound, but it was a complete revamp of everything. Like, you know, now you could save your game. Now you could, you know, spend a lot longer maybe playing these games. Like they just, in every capacity, they made these games.
Yeah, now you
better.
Have, you know, four extra buttons to, you know, control things better.
Yeah. So, yeah. Four additional buttons. Yeah, you're right.
So, you know, maybe it's nostalgia, but I kind of think, you know, maybe there really is something to this, and there really is a reason that, you know, we think of the Super NES as such a great system, worthy of, you know, having so many games we would say are deserving of perfect 10s.
Yeah, I'm going to go a little bit further and say I would actually give Super Mario Kart a perfect 10.
Oh, okay.
I think that at the time, you know, it really started a genre, and it was such a departure from, like, anything that Nintendo had really made to that point. You know, obviously, it kind of used an F-Zero type of engine, but I think just when you start to add in the fact that you're racing against somebody else, you have these power-ups that no one's ever seen before. I'm looking at you, Feather. That I miss the Feather. It really isn't used enough in other Mario Karts. And then also the battle mode, you know, not only could you race, but you could also, like, sort of have, like, team deathmatch. It was a pretty epic game that Nintendo released on Super Nintendo.
Well, it was definitely very innovative.
Yeah, but other than that, I think we've covered it, Chris.
All right, then let us move along to the Nintendo 64. And I know this might sound crazy, but I don't know if there's anything on the N64 I would give a 10 to.
Wow. Wow, really?
I mean, if I was going to give it to anything, it would be Ocarina of Time.
Mm.
It would not take a lot to convince me, but, you know, compared to some of the previous Zelda games, there was just something about the balance of combat and puzzles that didn't work as well for me. And I know it's, like, an amazing game, and it's, you know, probably my favorite on the N64, but would I actually give it a 10? I'm still kind of on the fence about it. I don't know. What about you? Would you give that one a 10?
Ocarina of Time?
Yeah.
I think you absolutely have to give Ocarina of Time a perfect 10. At that time, it really was, like, the new benchmark of what an action-adventure title is. I mean, Nintendo basically recreated Zelda in 3D and somehow didn't ruin it.
That's true.
Between the dungeons and Epona and the fact that there's day-night cycles and the music and just the sheer amount of fun I had playing that game, I'd have to give it a 10.
Well, it's very, you know, very much an arguable point, and there's nothing I can disagree with you with there. Would I do it personally? I'm not sure, but yeah, I mean, it's obviously one of the all-time best, so I will not disparage it in any way.
I also have to give Super Mario 64 a 10.
Okay.
For me, that game just changed the game. It was, for lack of a better way of saying it, it introduced Mario into a 3D environment. At the time, no one was really making 3D platform games very well at all. It just kind of didn't exist. I mean, there was Tomb Raider, but that was just clunkier than heck. This was Mario, and it was done exactly how you want Mario to be done in a 3D environment. And I truly don't think Nintendo has made a Mario game, a 3D Mario game, that has captured the same spirit of that original.
Well, if by that you mean they haven't made a Mario game that has a really annoying camera, then I'm going to agree with you.
I mean, if it did have any Achilles heel, it would be the camera. But honestly,
so that's the one thing for me, is that darn camera.
Yeah, but
that's what held it back, in my opinion, from being a 10.
That's fair.
But again, I can't argue, you know, its impact or its innovation factor. But you know, even back then, I felt like, you know, this is clearly, you know, a huge step forward, but still not there for me. But again, you know, I'd rather focus on the positive here, so I won't harp on that much.
I think that if you do look at it at its time and when it existed and when it came out, I think just the fact that it pioneered so much, and I hear what you're saying with the camera, I think that, you know, they were the first ones in this foray. You know, the camera was a thing that everyone had to figure out. Clearly, I think you're right. There was some camera issues in the game, but I still don't think that's enough to warrant it not getting a 10.
Well, I'll let you speak for yourself.
And then lastly, personally for me, GoldenEye
deserves
a 10 as well. When I talk to anybody about the N64 era, GoldenEye just comes up. GoldenEye is this like benchmark game that, you know, it really was the pre-Halo first-person shooter that everyone played.
It was, again, you know, the innovator. It was the standard by, you know, which first-person shooters were judged on console.
Yeah, and it shouldn't have been as good as it was, but somehow it was just this, like, amazing game that Rare happened into. And, you know, the fact that there was a really solid, if not excellent, four-player, multiplayer game on the N64 that was essentially must-play. It's almost unbelievable that game came out and was made by who it was made by and with that license. It just doesn't make sense.
It really was the perfect storm, kind
of. Yeah, it really was. But it almost feels like it shouldn't have happened that way, but it did. And I have to give it a perfect 10.
Well, it did, and I certainly can't fault your choice there.
But that is where I draw the line. I think that those are the only games that would qualify for a 10 on the N64.
All right, then, let us move along to the GameCube era. And for me, on GameCube, there is one game that stands above and beyond the rest that I would give a 10 to, and that would be Super Smash Bros. Melee.
Man after my own heart.
And again, this is kind of like the 16-bit stuff I was talking about, where, you know, they took a game that had been established in the previous generation, and they just, you know, really took it to the next level. You know, so much better looking, so much more content, really improved controls, in my opinion, and that just made it really, really fun. And, you know, this is where it went from, oh, a fighting game starring Nintendo characters to this, you know, basically love letter to Nintendo that is, you know, just completely irresistible.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's even crazier when you realize that it was basically a launch title.
That's true. It was only a couple months after launch that it hit, yeah. I really like the single-player mode in that game as well.
Oh, yeah.
That was another excellent aspect.
Yeah, with all the events that people keep clamoring for, they hope that comes back in the next one.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if they did that. But yeah, I mean, there were some levels that were just straight-up fighting. There were some that were, you know, a little bit of a mini-platform adventure. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing a return to something like that. But yeah, that was definitely a great one.
Yeah, Smash Bros. Melee is probably one of the only games that I actually tested, and I could still play it all the time and not ever get bored.
Understandable.
What else? Anything else on GameCube?
Nothing else for me. What about you?
I have to say Metroid Prime.
Oh, okay.
For me, that game really just, it was, again, this comedy of errors where you're like, how in the world is this new developer going to make a 3D first-person Metroid and have it be any good? And I think they just nailed it in spades. The ball mechanic is really fun to curl up in the morph ball, and there's these puzzle elements that are only solvable via the ball. It just somehow kept its Metroid spirit in 3D and in first person, and I don't know how they pulled it off, I guess is the best way to say it.
Well, they definitely did do a very, very good job of recreating it in 3D. I certainly do appreciate that series quite a bit. I'm looking forward to Metroid Prime 4, and I certainly see where you're coming from.
Now, why would you not give Wind Waker a 10, if I may ask?
Oh, because of, you know, the lengthy, drawn-out sailing part. I mean, I think they probably bother me less than they bother other people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there is just a lot of, you know, traveling and then having to change the direction of the wind that gets, you know, kind of monotonous. And if they had just, you know, tweaked that a little bit, then I could see it getting a 10. But because that's in there, that, you know, knocks it down just enough for me.
Yeah. Chris, I do have to give one more on the GameCube a perfect 10.
Oh, yeah?
And that would be Legend of Zelda, The Wind Waker. You know, people have their gripes about this game. I still think that there's nothing truly that looks and captures the way that game was created. I just think that the style of it and the soundtrack and just the overall feeling of what the heck am I going to find out here in this ocean when I played...
You're going to find one island per square.
When I played it back, you know, in 2002, I still think that it just, it deserves a spot in that perfect category.
Well, not for me. I mean, I love the game. I think it's fantastic, but I guess I'm just a little pickier.
Yeah.
I love the game. Don't get me wrong.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I just think it belongs on that mantle of excellence.
Well, that it does. But I dare say there are a lot of excellent games that still I wouldn't give a 10. Okay, moving along to the Wii era. And, you know, by now we've reached the time where I actually was, you know, reviewing games for Nintendo Power. You know, that was Wii and DS and 3DS, you know, even part of GameCube. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now we're at a spot where I actually could have been giving out 10s, and clearly I wasn't. So, you know, maybe it's just because I didn't review a game, or maybe, you know, I'm reconsidering something. But, you know, for me, for the most part, I don't think there were any games that came across my desk that should have gotten 10s. However, there are two that stand out to me that I was not able to review, and I really, really regret not being able to give them 10s in Nintendo Power. If there was anything I could have changed about my tenure there, it's that I could have reviewed these games and given them 10s, because they totally deserve it, and that would be Super Mario Galaxy 1 and 2.
Hmm.
And, you know, I just love, you know, the whole gravity mechanic. I love being able to run around these worlds. I thought it worked really, really well with the Wii controls. And, you know, when the second one came out, I was thinking, you know, there's no way this is going to be as good as the first. It's not going to be nearly as innovative. I was so wrong. It was every bit as fun and brilliant and creative as the first. I mean, I guess I didn't like the structure of it as much, but, you know, I wouldn't say that means it shouldn't get a 10. So I would absolutely positively give both Mario Galaxy games a 10 if I could have. So a big curse on my fellow reviewers for not giving them a 10.
You know, those games didn't strike me the way that I think they striked you. I definitely appreciated them, but I didn't fall in love with them the way I did with Odyssey. But
well, you're just a fool.
But well, that's possible.
So what about you? Is there anything on Wii or, you know, of that era that you would want to give a 10 to?
You know, honestly, Chris, for me, I don't think there was anything on Wii that was a perfect 10. I think there were some great games for the system. What prevents Twilight Princess, or I guess Skyward Sword, even though?
Oh, you're opening up those cans of worms, are you?
Yes, I am.
You know, I actually did review both of those games back in the day,
mm-hmm.
and I did not give either of them a 10, and I certainly stand by that stance. And I'm pretty sure I gave Twilight Princess a 9.5. And, you know, I think I like that game more than most people do. I played that game to death. You know, I worked on the strategy guide.
I
worked on all the magazine content, did the review, still love it. A lot of people don't anymore, but I still do. However, I certainly recognize its faults, particularly the pacing in the early part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the latter part of the game, the wolf becomes, you know, kind of not very useful. So, you know, between those two things, I think they pull it down from being a 10, just you know, a bit of a balancing issue there. And then with Skyward Sword, it was mostly the controls. You know, there's a lot of things I did like about the game, but I didn't think the controls worked well enough to justify a 10. Plus, structurally, the way it was broken into those three distinct areas.
Yep.
Instead of being, you know, one big continuous world like we've been used to with Zelda and like we fortunately got back to in Breath of the Wild, that was also the reason that I didn't give that a 10. Again, you know, I like the game a lot, but you know, was not a 10 to me.
Man, doubling down on your decision, huh?
But again, you know, I gave those games like, you know, a 9.5 or a 9.0 or something. I don't remember right now what I gave Skyward Sword. But yes, I certainly stand by that. But yeah, people at the time, they complain, how dare you give it such a low score of a 9.5.
Now, guys, if you don't agree with him, please send him hate mail and tweets, hate tweets.
Oh, I got plenty of hate mail for those back in the day, but I'm always eager for more.
Well, obviously you didn't teach anything.
Anyway, that brings us to current day, to current systems. That brings us to the Switch.
Wait, did we skip Wii U?
Yeah. Did you have any perfect 10 games on Wii U that you wanted to discuss?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Now that brings us to the Switch. And, you know, I feel like these games and the system, you know, they're so new. I mean, you know, I'm kind of still on the fence about some of the stuff. You know, clearly the two top games, though, are Super Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild. Do these deserve to get 10s?
If you ask me right now, I actually think they do.
You know, in the past, I believe I said I would give Breath of the Wild a 10, and now I'm kind of changing my mind.
Uh-oh.
I'm not sure I would.
Uh-oh.
Just because I discover myself getting so stressed about the weapon-breaking mechanic, but it would be pretty easy to convince me that it should indeed get a 10.
I think I might need to send you hate mail.
I give it like a 9.9.
Wow.
But yeah, obviously, Breath of the Wild, one of the best. And, you know, very, very hard to find fault. But, you know, as we said at the beginning of this whole thing is very subjective about what you consider fun and not fun. And for me, you know, the weapon breaking thing, I think that saps a little bit of the fun out of the experience for me.
Yeah.
But if you want to say it's a 10 and other people want to say it's a 10, I completely understand.
Yep. I'm going to give it a 10.
And Super Mario Odyssey, you know, I think that's still my favorite game on the system. You know, it's like, do I give that a 10 or not? It still kind of rubs me the wrong way about, you know, having to do motion controls for that spin. When you've got it in handheld mode, it's kind of impossible. And that irks me. But when I play the game, I'm using a pro controller on a TV. I'm not usually playing it in handheld mode. And, you know, nothing really detracts from the experience the way that I play the game. And so I'm kind of inclined to be like, yes, this game is definitely a 10. But I'm still not 100% sure. It's hard to say.
Wow.
But I want to say I'd give it a 10.
Let's just give it a 10.
Okay, if it makes you happy, sure. Would you give it a 10?
I think I would. To me, it was the most fun Mario game I've played since Mario 64. And I know we don't agree necessarily on Mario 64. Camera angle. But I think it does deserve its place amongst the best of the best.
Yeah, I mean, it is absolutely, you know, one of the best of the best. So I absolutely see it.
Yep.
I feel like this is one of those games where if I were reviewing it for a magazine, I would be inclined to ding it for that little control issue and give it a 9.5 and then, like, you know, regret it for the rest of my career. Like, why didn't I give it a 10? That game is so good. So if you want to say that game gets a 10, it's not too hard to convince me whatsoever.
I want to say that you're my one-up girl.
Why, thank you. I'd rather be your one-up boy, but whatever. You know, in this day and age, it can be either way.
Doesn't have the same ring to it.
Hey, that's in the song too, you know.
Is it?
It is, like the second verse. Pay me more attention next time, man.
Oh, boy. All right, what else? Yeah. Anything else on Switch?
That's it for me. Anything else on your end?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very, very picky. You know, as I pointed out, I very rarely do it. I can only think of, you know, like two games I would have given it during my career on Nintendo Power, and there was only one that I did while working on other publications. So I have to say, I'm pretty picky on anything post 16-bit, I guess. But like you said, you know, you want it to really mean something. That's why you don't give these things out willy-nilly. You save it for when it's something that's really big and significant and, you know, really great all the way across the board. So, you know, I think that's why we are so cautious about, you know, handing out these 10 out of 10s.
Indeed. You don't just want to go around giving Metroid Prime Pinball a 10.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. I think that does it for this week's big topic. And, of course, that means we should be wrapping up the show.
Oh.
However, before we do have time for one more thing.
What's that?
And, of course, that is a dramatic reading.
Ah.
This time, it is the introductory paragraph from a feature in Nintendo Power Volume 3 of the NES game Anticipation. If you know someone who loves board games like Pictionary and Trivial Pursuit, Tell them about this exciting video newcomer. Anticipation truly opens up a whole new world of video fun. The idea is simple enough. You and your fellow players must identify a sketch as it is being drawn. Sounds easy? Not on your life. Once you've identified the puzzle, you have to spell out the answer while racing against the clock. Strategies must also be mastered, making it doubly tough since everyone else is trying to guess your move. Combining board game participation with video sophistication, that's anticipation.
That was actually pretty good. I don't mind that.
I'm just intimidated now.
Yeah, they make it sound intense.
Like, I know, totally. Like, I wasn't, this looked like, it's just some little, friendly board game. You look at the cover box art, and it's like, oh, here's a bunch of people having fun. I read this, it's like, this game is going to brutally maul you. It's really tough. I'm like, what the heck, man? Jeez. Looks like they're having fun. Guess not. Okay.
Now, did you play much Anticipation back in the day?
I'm not sure I ever played it. Sorry.
Oh, man. To me, it was one of the funnest. Like, this was like kind of the original board game you could play on TV.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. And that's what they were saying, too.
I'm pretty sure that it was basically Pictionary. Like, maybe they tried to get the Pictionary license and it just didn't work out. Or maybe this predates Pictionary. I don't know.
Well, I think LJN did a Pictionary game on the NES, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, even the board kind of looks like Trivial Pursuit or something. But, it was essentially Draw Something. If anyone's familiar with that, that was the game that came out on iPhone maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah, I certainly remember when that was the big craze for a little bit.
Yeah, it in a lot of ways, it was just like that. You know, this pencil on the screen tried to draw something, and everyone tried to chime in on what it was.
Well, just judging by this paragraph here, it sounds like it's way more scary and intense than that. So, I don't know. I'm intimidated. I think I'll just, stick to Draw Something instead.
The box art is pretty amazing.
Well, no argument for me there.
I recommend anyone should Google image search Anticipation for NES.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Pete at BurlyRedYeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, of course it would be great if you told your friends about us. One last thing I wanted to mention, we will be taking a little break for the next week or two while I'm on vacation, but we will be back to continue discussing Nintendo games and products after that. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud,
shiver me timbers,
and our little buddy who sounds strangely like Elijah Wood, Spyro the Dragon,
something is happening, Sparks.
We will see you next time.